Michigan and much of the country are paying close attention to the lead in Flint's water. But last week, another source of lead in that city made the news. A Michigan State University researcher, working with Australian scientists, recently confirmed a curious fact. The last couple of years, the lead levels in children's blood have been rising in the late summer, July, August, and September. They say it indicates the city's soil is also a source of lead. Dr. Rick Sadler was the MSU researcher on that team. He's a professor in MSU's College of Human Medicine and is based in Flint, and he joins us to help connect a few dots. Welcome, Professor Sadler.
Thanks, Mark, for having me.
What was the now, did you start out with a hypothesis here like we all learned in grade school? Did you have a theory of what was going on and you sought to confirm it or deny it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in most older post-industrial cities, you have a higher concentration of soil lead in the center city. And it's pretty well known that in the late summer, as the temperature rises and the precipitation declines, that you get this kick-up of dust. And so exposure to soil lead increases during that time.
So the aim of your study was to confirm or deny what exactly, whether or not that was
right.
Happening. Okay.
Yeah, to confirm that and to corroborate the original American Journal of Public Health study that I did with Dr. Mona, that the increase in blood lead among children was not due to other sources.
So that said, explain to us here your main conclusion in a little bit more depth. What did you find?
Yeah, so between 2010 and 2012, we see a decline in the third quarter in blood lead in children. And in 2014, it spikes back again from under 4% to over 7%. And that's for Flint zip codes. For the city, so for the city of Flint, it's even higher during 2014. And in 2015, it remains at nearly 6%. So that's bucking the trend statewide.
And talk to us here about the seasonal dynamic in play here. This is, I mean, summer heat, summer dryness plays a role here. How exactly?
Yeah, so lead has a long residence time in the soil. And during the winter, you know, the soil is compacted or it's under snow. It's not being kicked around as much, so you're not being exposed. And also, in the summer, kids are playing outside more, so they're just naturally exposed more to the elements.
Okay, so the blood levels peaked July, August, and September. Now, did they go down after September?
Yeah, they returned to more what you'd expect in the fourth quarter. But the main issue is that they didn't return to what the state or the county average were. So we still had these disparities. It's just that they were that much higher in the third quarters.
Mm. Well, especially given all the attention that water is getting, is lead in the soil being overlooked? Can you make that assumption as a result of your study?
I think I would say I just hope that it doesn't become overlooked. You know, there are people that have been studying this for a long time, and the Edible Flint Local Food Collaborative has been testing soil in the city of Flint for 5 years. So it's a continuing issue, but the main thing that we wanted to make sure was that it didn't fall off the table while we were also being concerned with the water issue.
How do you remediate lead in soil?
It's a difficult long-term process. There is a process called phytoremediation, whereby you can there are plants you can plant that will uptake lead into their root systems, but it's not been shown to be effective in large areas or with high quantities of lead in the soil. The good thing for Flint is that soil lead levels in most of the city are not above the EPA threshold, and they're actually, in many parts of the city, they're not even above the most stringent thresholds. But, I mean, all that to say that even no amount of lead exposure is safe, so it's a continuing issue.
Are there interim measures?
Well, generally speaking, it's just, the precautions that one would take. So try not to get overexposure to lead dust in the summer. And good nutrition is really an effective buffer year-round.
We're talking with MSU Professor Rick Sadler of the College of Human Medicine. He is based in Flint. Dr. Sadler's just announced the results of a study that found lead in the city's soil is a particular issue here in the late summer months. That's the trend, the pattern. Where does the lead in soil come from, and where does it come from in a urban setting like Flint?
Yeah, in urban areas, it's often because of the legacy effects of leaded gasoline, lead paint from older homes, lead from factories, And like I mentioned, lead has this long residence time in the soil. So even though we haven't been using leaded gasoline for many years, it tends to stay in the soil for a long time.
I guess I take it your study confirmed your suspicions here. Was there anything in your study that surprised you?
Not really, yeah. I mean, it was kind of a confirmatory study. You know, it's still troublesome, of course, anytime you see results like this, but yeah, no big surprises.
You were quoted as saying, Dr. Sadler, that lead in Flint soil is not any worse than in any city with an industrial background or a manufacturing background. Do you think your findings would be duplicated all over the country then?
Yeah, for sure. There's a kind of a classic, they call it a bullseye pattern, where you have higher concentration of higher soil lead in inner city areas. And again, that's because of those legacy histories as being sites of factories and so forth.
And as we've learned, a person exposed to unsafe levels of lead, let's say in the late summer, wouldn't necessarily test high if they weren't tested until months later. The lead would have left their system. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's why these environmental markers are important to have as well, because you can't always discern that from an individual's blood lead levels.
What are health officials and physicians doing with your findings?
As with the other work we're doing, I hope it just kind of adds more fuel to the fire and it helps with advocacy and helps in reminding politicians and people who are looking to get involved that there are other issues that are going to continue to be at play here.
Should the legislature, should legislation be considered to remedy this situation?
Again, I mean, I think a lot's been being done, and part of it is, it's kind of like this inverse curve where after so much of the soil is remediated, it becomes prohibitively expensive to, get that last little bit out of the soil. And it is important to remember that soil lead or blood lead levels have been declining, and so we've generally been seeing an attenuation of these effects.
Is there any evidence as far as the impact that lead in soil might be having on kids in cities?
Yeah, so soil lead influences the body the same way that intaking lead from water would. So the same things that we know about the water lead exposure are true with soil lead.
The Flint Water Task Force alleged that the lead crisis, the water crisis, was really an instance of environmental injustice. Does your finding connect with that allegation in some way?
Yeah, for sure. I think any time that we abandon our central cities and disinvest from them as a society, we're creating man-made environmental injustices.
Your work seems to happen at a really interesting place where medicine meets geography. In fact, your own studying and training involves, as I understand it, quite a bit of geography. Explain for us how your career evolved the way it did.
Yeah, so I was trained at the University of Western Ontario in the geography department. And in the Canadian planning context, there's a much closer connection between urban planning and public health. And so what we do is we look at how where you live influences your opportunities for healthy behaviors.
So tell me this. How long have you – you're in Flint right now. You're in your office in Flint as an MSU faculty member here. How long have you been living in Flint?
Well, I grew up in the area, and I only ever left the Flint area for grad school to go to Canada and came right back here.
What's it like?
A year ago.
What's it like having grown up in that area and to see it be going through what it's going through right now?
Yeah, it's troublesome, even as a kid. I mean, both of my parents grew up in the area as well, so I grew up hearing about what Flint was like back in the 1960s. And, as I aged, started learning more about, all the economic and racial issues that Flint had gone through. So, it definitely weighs heavily on my heart.
What do you make of the larger effort in terms of coming to grips with this thing? I mean, you're there. You grew up there. What do you make of what the state's doing? What do you make of all of the various efforts to try to right this situation?
Yeah, I have a lot of mixed emotions about it. On the one hand, I appreciate that lately, anyways, the state has been getting more involved and trying to increase their efforts. On the flip side, you know, this has been decades in the making through kind of anti-urban policy. And so, like I said, it's troublesome to me that, you know, this didn't have to happen.
We've been talking with Dr. Rick Sadler. He was an MSU researcher on a team that just recently explored why it is that blood lead levels in young people in Flint tended to go up later in the summer, the drier months, and it confirmed a suspicion of his that it had to do with dust that is stirred up in the months of July, August, and September, and it confirms a number of suspicions he had. Rick Sadler, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.